Well, it's that time of year again. Welcome back to the marketplace. It comes around very, very quickly. One thing we learned from last season, though, is that there are a lot of conversations going on. Free agency yet to open, but a lot to talk about. I'm Jack Heverin. Great to have your company. The marketplace will be, as it was last off-season, your one-stop shop for everything happening during the free agency period. Alongside me, firstly, he is the best newsbreaker in Australian basketball, Olgun Ulic from ESPN. Olgun, a lot going on right now. I can see a lot of notes on your pages there.
You gave me the rundown. I wrote notes around it. There's more going on now than I think I've ever seen in a free agency before, as far as teams figuring out what they want. So this one's really, really exciting.
Pete Hawley, great to have you on the marketplace. No one understands the depth charts and what teams need more than you. I guess we can already start to plug a few holes, can't we?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. As Olgun said, there's a lot of moving and shaking, and I'm looking forward to breaking that all down. And there's some glaring holes that teams want to fix going into NBL 25, and that's where the conversations start early enough that they can try and make a run at the championship. But true or false, Olgun, I gave you one scoop in NBL 24 that you had to go and get.
You gave me one scoop.
That's all I needed. One scoop.
I had to confirm it with like a real source, but I appreciate that very much.
No worries.
Like a real source, he says. Isn't that insulting? Still to come on the show today, we'll talk about some of the names to keep an eye on during this period as well. We'll talk about some college names that are worth keeping an eye on as well, and a couple of big fish that are swimming around in the pond at the moment. Let's start though with what we know so far. And I think the obvious place to start is Xavier Cooks and the Sydney Kings. Huge signing that's landed in the last few days.
Yeah, so my reporting earlier this week was Xavier Cooks signing that three-year deal with the Sydney Kings. And so obviously it's a return for Xavier Cooks. They won back-to-back championships with him as their key guy. They were able to build around him as their marquee player. They had one season, which I think everyone within the Sydney Kings organization is ready to just forget, and they get to do this again. Build around Xavier Cooks in what I'm told is the largest deal ever negotiated in NBL history.
And Peter, I think the fascinating thing here is that in the space of a few weeks, Sydney have got a new coach and their number one player. As they're starting to build the remainder of their roster, it's very clear that they're going to be very aggressive.
Olgun said it best. This is what you want to do when you make a championship team. And I mean, they've already had success. They know that the blueprint is there. But you find your marquee guy or a couple of guys. Normally it's one. And then you build a team that's going to complement that player, that's going to help them thrive to be that MVP level. We know Xavier Cooks has won an MVP. He's won a grand final MVP championships, much like Perth do with Bryce Cotton. The Melbourne and I have done with Chris Golding. Those teams that are always competing, you get your number one guy and then you build around that. That's always a good starting point, and it'd be fun to have him back in the league.
There are some pieces of the Sydney Kings that we'll get to very shortly that might have a bit to do with the Xavier Cooks decision. Isaac Humphries re-signing at Adelaide, huge for them. He was a priority for them, but there was a lot of interest from other teams, obviously, for an Australian big of that caliber.
Yes, the Sydney Kings were a team that were ready to show interest in Isaac Humphries. He was able to make that decision very quickly, though. The familiarity in Adelaide, someone like Scott Ninnis continuing to be there, Dejan Vasiljevic continuing to be there. And so the way they ended their season, there was enough familiarity for Isaac to say, okay, this is the situation I want to be in. Yeah. I know what my role is going to be in this environment. And so he lent into that, signed that three-year deal. They've got Vasiljevic and Humphries signed for three seasons. In the same way we talk about Gorgian and Cooks, that's a really solid local situation to have for the next three seasons in Adelaide.
Kind of looks stable all of a sudden, Adelaide, doesn't it?
Which is something they needed. We harped on about it all season long. It was stability, right? And now that you have that locked in, that local core, you can also build and complement guys. But they were the second lowest scoring team in the league last season, the worst three-point shooting team, which is going to be interesting to see how they go. They've got Dejan Vasiljevic, the best local shooter outside of Chris Golding, going around. What other pieces can you float around there to try and bolster that up? They were last in bench points too last season. So yes, you've got Isaac Humphries, you've got your starting unit, which is where you need to start, but then you need to start putting in those pieces around, which is going to be very fun, I think, for the Adelaide 36ers this offseason.
To the Brisbane Bullets, there was an option for Nathan Sobey. The Bullets have decided to take that option and he will be with the Bullets next season.
That was a really easy pickup for Brisbane. From what I understand, his money goes down slightly going into this season, and so he had an impressive season. The shooting splits were down from last season, but from a production standpoint, from this is our star local standpoint, this was an easy pickup for Brisbane, and we'll see what happens beyond that. He's getting up there in age, though the athleticism hasn't gone anywhere seemingly, but this is a good step for Brisbane just to remain somewhat. There's something about Brisbane now that feels secure.
He was really good in NBL 24 and he had some massive moments where early on we're talking about a potential MVP. That was the kind of player. Again, you talk about building a team around once you've got that locked away and can build forward. One thing that holds back, I think, a lot of championship teams, and we're going to get onto this in the marketplace as the episodes go on, that point guard spot is so crucial to nail. Especially when you're talking about Xavier Cooks, Isaac Humphries, Vasiljevic, and Nathan Sobey. That point guard spot to win a championship, recent history shows it needs to be an MVP-level point guard in a Jalen Adams type. Casper Ware, we know he didn't win it, but he was a finalist at the time. Or it needs to be a Shai Ilie, Dele, Damian Martin, Mitch Norton type. They are teams who have all won titles so far, and all of that helps complement guys like Nathan Sobey.
Jack Jumpers have got some of their pieces already locked in for next season. The biggest, and you could argue the most important, was Will Magnay. That signature is done, and the fact that that was done before the end of the championship series is huge for Tasmania.
Yeah, those negotiations started really, really early in the piece. Will Magnay, Jack McVeigh, Sean McDonald. They're the three locals that this Jack Jumpers team want to build around. And from what we saw in the championship series, that is a worthy trio of local players to continue to build around. And so it wouldn't surprise me if they start negotiating with Jack McVeigh to re-up on his deal. And then the same goes with Sean McDonald.
Smart from Tassie, because again, you've got to beat the rest of the team to the punch, because Will Magnay, the way he finished off and once he was healthy, the NBL regular season and even the final series, he's unbelievable. And the price continues to go up. And if he stays healthy, that's what a lot of people wanted to see. And he proved that he became one of the most dominant big men in the league. And for them to secure that, it goes a long way in helping them continue to have success.
I guess the only tricky part of that negotiation, I would imagine, would have been the state of Will Magnay's body. And not because of what's happened this season, but you've got to take past injuries into consideration, a bit like Isaac Humphries has been, although his last two seasons have been a clean bill of health. Was that a stumbling point at all when it came to other teams or even Tasmania and their considerations?
It didn't seem like it. And from what I was told that the sort of financial situation of that contract was, doesn't seem like the injury was a sticking point in any sort of way. I think they knew the talent that they had in Will Magnay, and they wanted to make sure that no matter what happens, there is some risk to it, of course, but they wanted to lock that in.
The flip side of that is the other teams would have had that little bit of a concern, because it's inevitable when you've had some significant time missed and you've proven what you can do on one level. That is weighing the other team's mind. But again, the upside of it is too hard to not be there. And if you have to pay overs just to keep him, right now you think of Tasmania, you're thinking of Scott Roth, understandably, you're thinking of Jack McVeigh, but then you're thinking of Will Magnay. He seems like he's Tassie through and through right now.
And we thought the same about Alan Williams in the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, but that situation is no longer. That's not new news, but we are recapping everything that we know so far. Anyone surprised by that?
No, not so much surprised. I kind of felt like this was inevitable just from a Phoenix standpoint. Really disappointing season. So much out of their control. We know that. We spoke about it on the coverage. Injuries, there's to a level that you can't control those. And it seems like this team, and you mentioned it, Olgan, when they were doing a review, that they're kind of going back from a blank slate. And we're trying to go forward and build from there. And it frees up a lot of money on that side of things, I would assume. But what comes next is the first couple of signings is going to be key for them. And I'm very intrigued to see what path they go down, especially in a point guard role.
We spoke about it ad nauseum, about the process review that they were going through. Part of it was on the court, part of it was cultural. Now, Alan Williams, we know off the court, is the sort best. Of an outstanding person. But they needed to figure out some things on the court, and getting rid of Alan Williams and figuring out a different direction to go in that spot, it seemed like something that they had to do.
It also, when you say that, is Alan Williams, I think, was understandable. Look, I've been here, I've dealt with my injuries. It wasn't that they kicked him out the door. It was kind of like, okay, maybe we can both just go different ways. We can both try and chase some success. But as I said, the point guard role, I look at there since they've been in the league, Kiefer Sykes, John Roberson, Xavier Mumford, Gary Brown. Not the top tier point guards we've seen, like Jalen Adams, Casper Ware, and also not that local one. I'm very intrigued to see the name they go after, because you're going to have to make a splash in that regard.
Wildcats have been pretty proactive when it comes to Christian Doolittle, another who was recently signed for next season. Seems to be a John Riley kind of guy, with the way that John Riley wants them to structure at the defensive end of the court.
A pretty ideal third import, I think. They see him as the perfect fit next to Bryce, a really low maintenance guy import to have on that team. And so locking him in just made a lot of sense for this franchise. Defensively, we spoke about it all season long, how impressive he was. He gets to do that again next season with an entire offseason under his belt too.
Well, I spoke about it. A lot of people jumped on my coattails.
I think we both spoke about it.
We did. He was unbelievable on the defensive end. And you're right, though. When you think about having three imports, and what pieces you want, they can't all be Bryce Cottons. That's just not the way it works. And obviously, financially, but there's only one ball out there. I thought he was outstanding once he found his feet in the NBL, which we often forget because we come through a whole season, we see the imports that really thrive. It takes a while to adjust to the game in the NBL and in Australia. I thought he was awesome. And you're also just trying to figure out potential championship-type matchups in the season ahead. And Xavier Cooks was dominant at the time. What kind of player can you potentially quieten down and have that challenge? Well, that's a Christian Doolittle with his athleticism, his size. That's a good matchup there to look forward to.
And the last from what we know so far is Sam Mananga, Og. And this is a situation that I think needs a little bit of it explaining, and that's exactly what this show is here to do, is to explain these situations. This is almost the closest thing to a trade that we're likely to see in the NBL.
Yeah, and this has always been possible with teams. The only difference is teams just haven't been proactive about it. And so when word got out that Sam Mananga was open to change, the New Zealand Breakers, they got right on top of it, right? They went to the Cairns Taipans and they asked, is this someone who we can take off your hands? And then it's just a negotiation between those two parties. And if every single party agrees to it, so if the Taipans, if Mananga, if the New Zealand Breakers agree to it, then there's nothing stopping them from just reshuffling contracts and making it work. And so it wouldn't surprise me if more teams start to do this. Just be more proactive about looking at other rosters, see guys who maybe don't fit over there, might fit with us, and be proactive about it.
Oh, I love it, and I'm with you for that exact reason. We talk about a trade period, how hard it would be, especially with players who aren't making the big dollars of the rest of the league. But you think about a different scenery when what one team needs and what another team doesn't if a player is unhappy. And I go back to a season a few years ago when Cairns were struggling to field a team due to injuries and they couldn't do anything. And a guy like Emmett Nahr was sitting on the bench for the Hawks and everybody was thinking, imagine if he was at Cairns and he'd go in there playing starters minutes. So I think it's great. Sam Mananga, I think he's going to flourish under Marty Mayor. I think that's exactly the kind of piece that he can use in New Zealand and can build off. And to have a local Kiwi home is always exciting.
So there's what we know so far during the period. Now, in terms of the key dates, and these are ones to keep an eye on, particularly as this comes around very, very quickly. As you can see here, free agency will open 14 days, no later than 14 days after the last game in the championship series. From there, 72 hours before free agency begins, all of the options must be confirmed and then lists will be circulated for the team so that they know exactly what they are dealing with. So we often get that question of, when's it all actually starting? Hopefully that makes things a little bit clearer for you as well. Let's get to the names to watch, because this is the fun part. We start to talk about the key names during the period and where they may end up. We did have Xavier Cooks on this list, but we've had to make a change, obviously, because of what's happened. So let's talk Jack White.
Yeah, so Jack White is a name that Melbourne United, they've made it pretty clear from what I understand that they are keen on Jack White if Luke Travers ends up getting to the NBA, which every day seems like a more distinct possibility. The thing that I will say, though, is that Jack White is planning to completely exhaust his NBA options. And so he will continue to try to climb that ladder and get through that pathway. And if that doesn't happen, there are options outside the NBL, which he will also exhaust. There are options in Europe, in Asia. There's a lot of money outside the NBL. And so even if United does want him back, even if there is that opening, I wouldn't say that this is a definite to happen, because Jack White does have so many options outside of the NBL.
And they do have the first right of refusal, correct?
That's correct.
With Jack White.
Which is important to mention as well, much like the Xavier Cooks situation.
He can't go to any other team if he does have a desire to return to the NBL.
Which becomes interesting, right? I mean, I'm on the fence and we're biased but as NBL people, but I believe Luke Travers is an NBA player. I believe he deserves his legitimate chance to be over there for a significant period of time to chase that dream and live it out like we all think he should. But if he stays for Melbourne United, and then Jack White does decide that he wants to come back, that's where it can become tricky. But selfishly, I'd love to see Jack White back in the NBL, and I think he deserves a lot better of a chance abroad as well. So there's a lot of things to watch in that space.
This time 12 months ago, on the very first episode of The Marketplace, one of the key names on the top of the list was Will McDowell-White. 12 months on, here we go again.
It looks like we're going to be in almost the exact same situation, where Will McDowell-White is one of, if not the key free agent for most teams. From what I understand, all but three teams are preparing to reach out to Will McDowell-White and his representatives and show interest in Will McDowell-White. The three teams, I'm told, haven't yet expressed interest from within for Will McDowell-White are the Cairns Taipans, Illawarra Hawks, and Melbourne United. Everyone else is planning to have Will McDowell-White atop their free agent list of guys who they're going to chase. And granted, he had a down season. It was marred by some injuries, multiple injuries. But there's an idea of what Will McDowell-White is as a big point guard, a big local point guard. If you can get someone like that, the idea of Will McDowell-White is extremely valuable.
He's one of one. And again, you can't look too much into this season and what we saw. His numbers were down 9 points per game, 4 assists. He played 24 games. 6 of those he played less than 20 minutes due to injuries or returning. So there was significant reasons why. Also, the timing of the injuries. He started injured and then had to try and fit alongside an elite import in Parker Jackson Cartwright. That is hard to do on the fly when you don't have significant practice time. NBL 23 average 11, 5, and 6. And again, this is a team, you talk about what championship teams need. If you get Will McDowell-White as the figurehead, as the leader of that engine room, you're one step closer to winning a title because he is so unique. He is that one-on-one type player.
So how did New Zealand play this? This is the part with Will that I'm trying to work out, is that his numbers were a little bit down on last season. There were reasons for it. And I'm a huge Will fan, so I'm certainly not trying to talk about him in a negative sense. But he didn't have the same season. Does he command the same number? And does he command the same level of importance when it comes to New Zealand rebuilding their roster?
That's what we're about to find out. From the New Zealand piece of this, they do see him as a long-term piece of that franchise. And so they do have a desire to keep him. He has a player option, which he has yet to exercise one way or the other. And so New Zealand does see him as someone who they'd love to keep and love to continue to build around. Your question of has his value risen or dropped since last season? That's what we're going to find out. Yeah. We'll see if any of the teams are able to meet the potential demands of Will McDowell-White. If they are able to meet them, then great. Then they may be in the sweepstakes for him. If they're not, then it may make more sense for Will McDowell-White just to pick up that player option, return to New Zealand for a number that he negotiated last season, which is a fairly significant number, and use that as his contract year and potentially get an even bigger number next offseason, whether that's in New Zealand or otherwise.
It's staggeringly us sitting here again talking about potentially what could be, but I think the leverage of other teams is what could get the number towards what he wants. I think there's significant reason to kind of wipe this season from the memory.
So you don't think his value is decreased?
No, I don't, because again, I think they're so hard to find, though, that local point guard that encompasses what he does. Like, he's not a Shaley, he's not a Deli defensively, but that court vision, and all, as I mentioned, you put him alongside a Bryce Cotton, and we know there's options there with the Webster brothers. You put him alongside a Milton Doyle with a Will Magnay lob threat. You put him aside these teams, DJ Vasiljevic with shooting, Isaac Humphries in a pick and roll, Sydney Kings and Brian Gorgian. There is so many reasons to be enticed by that possibility. And if that costs you a little bit more in the end to kind of get him away from New Zealand, then I think you have to take the punt.
To the Taipans and Bull Kwol, a fascinating piece. Bull essentially signed a one-year deal and bet on himself. I'm not sure whether that turned out to be totally wise in terms of whether his, like we were just talking about with value, whether his value increased or decreased or stays around the same. Where have you got him and where is the interest landing with Bull?
I'll say this, no matter what any of us three think about Bull Kwol's value, we're not the ones who dictate it. The marketplace does, right? No pun intended, actually, all pun intended.
That's why we called it the marketplace.
Right,
yeah.
So the market dictates how much Bull Kwol is worth. And there aren't many guys out there from a free agency standpoint. There aren't many marquee level guys. And so all of these teams around the league who do want a marquee may pay overs for someone like Bull Kwol. And so there are teams that are preparing to show a ton of interest in him. The Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, Sydney Kings, Illawarra Hawks, New Zealand Breakers. They're the four teams that I'm told are the strongest on Bull Kwol, and it wouldn't surprise me if it ultimately comes down to the Phoenix and the Kings as the two teams that will ultimately battle it out for Bull Kwol. And we know what he brings. He is a starter-level player. He is a marqueeable player, someone who plays both ends of the floor. You can imagine him in the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, for example, next to someone like Mitch Creek, whichever point guard they bring in. You can see him with the Sydney Kings under Brian Gorgian.
Oh, he's a Gorgian guy.
Under Brian Gorgian, next to Xavier Cooks. You can imagine the defensive intensity that sort of team would bring. There are a bunch of teams in them that will prepare to be in the mix for him, and he's going to get a fairly decent number. Him betting on himself no matter what everyone thinks of it, has worked.
I think it's worked. And again, I've been really high on his talent. And the biggest thing that we keep talking about is the foul trouble, the ability to stay on the floor. He fouled out 5 times across the course of the season. 9 times he had 4 fouls, though. And I think that was the timing of it, right? You pick up 2 in the first quarter trying to guard Bryce Cotton, and Cairns had to switch another player, and you kind of lose the tone setting that you're really good at on the defensive end. Averaged nearly 13 points a game, shooting 41% from three. Now, when you put that alongside a guy like Xavier Cooks, who needs shooting around to really open the floor up and let him be at his best, that can become enticing. I think it absolutely worked to bet on himself. I'm wondering, we all heard the same thing about the Phoenix being interested. Is them kind of going with a blank space more beneficial potentially to see him down in the Phoenix, or does it put that on hold saying, hey, we need to fill some other pieces first and then we'll pick up the phone? Who knows? But you did mention as a marquee level not being out there. It might be worth mentioning the marquee rule, because I do see it a lot online, and we don't have the exact numbers, but as a marquee, and Olgan, you are the man who's around all this, the dotting the I's and crossing the T's, and you can pay whatever number it wants, and on the salary cap, it means one thing.
That's practically the case, yeah. You can, let's use Bull Call as an example. You can go and give him, let's just say $2 million as some absurd number. Mm-hmm. That is your...
That is absurd.
Yeah. That's a good absurd number.
But I know what you're saying.
Yeah. Let's use that as the example. Yeah. You can give him $2 million. Mm. That would be your team spend, but on the cap, it would cost you something different. So, for example, this season, the marquee number was, the first marquee was 218. That's $218,000. So, no matter what you pay Bull Call, that is what he would count on on the cap, $218,000. Now, the marquee, there are 4 marquees. The second marquee number was $291,000. So, if you have 2 marquee players, let's say it's the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, you have Mitch Creek and Bull Call. One of those will count on the cap as $218,000. One of them will count on the cap as $291,000. So no matter what you spend, that is the cash that you will spend, and a team has the prerogative to do that. When it comes to the cap spend, the marquee rule allows you to bring those guys in and potentially stay under the cap so you don't have to pay in the luxury.
It's so important for the league, and a lot of people, when they talk about teams spending or whatever, you've got to spend to get good players. Yeah. We want the best players in the NBL, and this is why the marquee rule is so perfect and so great to have, is because you want to entice and be able to pay these players what they're worth, and then still be under the soft cap as well. It is a soft cap. It's not a hard cap. So if you do go over, you do have to pay the tax on it on the other side. But that's why I think it's just a great addition to have and to understand how it works. And we'll talk about it in the future in Marketplace. Maybe we'll do some mock teams here and there about how it all works. But you are allowed, you can essentially go and pay a player a ridiculous amount of money or absurd number like Olga threw out of $2 million. And towards your cap, it is just one thing. And you can stay under the cap and compete for a title.
And it's the reason why having someone like Xavier Cooks in Sydney, for example, has more value than having someone like Bryce Cotton in Perth, because all of Bryce Cotton's contract counts toward the cap. So that does hamper you to an extent, because if you do go, because that will, there's more likely that you will go over the cap with an import of that price and you'll have to pay some luxury tax. Whereas with Xavier Cooks, you can absolutely marquee that number and you can potentially pay less tax, be under the cap and pay less tax.
Let's work our way through a couple of other names. One is Tyler Harvey, and I guess why he's on the list is A, he's out of contract, but B, could he be an Australian by the time next season comes around? Where is that all at the moment?
So the updated timeline that I got was that June 2015 was roughly around when Tyler Harvey will be eligible for his citizenship. So that would be at the end of next season.
Okay. So does that change things a bit?
Not necessarily. He still has an interest in a multi-year deal. The Illawarra Hawks have an interest in presenting an offer to him. And so they're just waiting on that. But a multi-year deal would mean that he would become theoretically an Australian citizen in the middle of that deal. So there is value in that. The only sort of caveat that I would put there is that marquee, because of the number, the first marquee number is 219,000, 218,000. The second one's 291. Tyler Harvey would probably have to be your 4th best player in order to really make him valuable as an Australian, right? You have to have 3 imports over him in order for him to actually be valuable as a marquee player. Otherwise, he's just an expensive player.
Yeah, I'm very intrigued to see what happens, because you said you should be eligible for a citizenship. You still have to get the citizenship as well.
Don't bring that up with Perth.
Well, I'm trying to stay away from that. But again, he's not a one that he doesn't leave. I saw him in Noosa in the off-season last year. He likes to hang around, which is going to help that. And I'm only speaking from experience with my wife. I think it took 7-8 months or something. So it does take time as well. And how that works, if you put all your eggs, if you're Justin Tatum and the Hawks in that basket of, okay, So NBL 26, he'll be a local. That takes a little bit of time, and then you have to restructure things. There is a lot to think about there, but obviously it's a lot more enticing to have him become a local and be one of the best locals we have.
Olgan, you're pretty keen to add the name Antonius Cleveland to the list in terms of names to watch. Why is that?
He's someone who has expressed some interest in returning to the NBL. The Adelaide 36ers have made no secret of wanting to bring him into the mix. I will stress that he is currently contracted in Israel. I believe there's a team option on his deal there, and it is a significant amount of money, more money than he would earn here. And so that's also something to mention. But he is someone that we know is an excellent defender in this league. He could be one of the best players in this league. And so Adelaide 36ers are a team that will show interest in someone like him. And it wouldn't surprise me if the Sydney Kings, Cleveland played under Brian Gorgeous at the Illawarra Hawks. And he is absolutely a Gorgeous sort of guy. It wouldn't surprise me if they show interest in him too.
I keep my ear to the ground, not as much as you do, or ear to the phone, but I've heard the same thing. Obviously, Adelaide, which we all know, is definitely interested. And you think about the style of play that Scott Innes is trying to run with the team they have, it'd be a great piece to have. But also, the success he had here, he loved playing in the NBL, loved being in Australia. So if he gets into some sort of little bidding war there between Sydney and Adelaide, that'll be very interesting to see how it plays out if he does come back and can manage to get out of that deal.
Pete, one that you wanted on the list for names to watch was Jordan Hunter.
Again, we talk about big locals and the ones who can make a significant impact. I thought he was outstanding in NBL 24. With all the chaos that went on the floor with the Kings and the trouble they had, he was always a consistent guy who could go out there and get things done. And where he lands, I think a lot of teams could use his services. Will Magne staying in Tasmania? You think about some other options that need to be taken up around the league in terms of pick and roll type players. I heard a couple of other teams had picked up the phone, and then a couple of those teams also have made re-signing since, so you can kind of put two and two together there. But that's a fascinating watch to see what happens, and potentially maybe that if he explores overseas, but I hope not because I don't want to lose that kind of local talent.
Yeah, when we focus on Jordan Hunter, I think of the big man carousel that I had predicted earlier in the season and why that's not going to happen anymore. Yeah. Because Will Magne re-upped in Tasmania, because Isaac Humphries re-upped in Adelaide. We spoke about Alan Williams earlier, departing the South East Melbourne Phoenix. They are a team that now has an opening at the five spot, and I would expect to show a ton of interest in Jordan Hunter.
It fits.
It makes sense. And again,
it fits everywhere.
Well, it does. And again, I'm thinking about the Sydney Kings, right? And potentially, to be honest, why as a starter, it might not fit alongside Xavier Cooks. Necessarily, he can step out and shoot the three. But if you have those threats, we've seen Jarrell Martin. I mean, he played an undersized. He's unique. I know he's an import as well. But being able to be that legitimate outside threat and, again, space the floor to allow your MVP and Xavier Cooks to do what he does best, that's why maybe if they exhaust some other options first. But it's an intriguing one to watch. I think it makes sense also that the South East Melbourne Phoenix colours.
So kind of reading between the lines a little bit here, kind of get the feeling that we don't think that Jordan Hunter will be in Sydney next season.
It doesn't seem that way. I wouldn't completely rule it out.
Sure.
But as of now, it doesn't seem like they're going to be able to get something negotiated and agreed on by the time Jordan Hunter is able to test free agency and see what else is out there for him. It seems like there's going to be a parting of ways there.
Maybe it's not the big man carousel like it was going to be. Maybe it's more like a big man lazy Susan now. Like we'll just put it in the middle of the table here
just
and
pick one.
Spin it around. So let's put Jonah Bolden on the lazy Susan. Where's he at right now?
Jonah Bolden is a very expensive player in world basketball. And so he obviously came back to the Sydney Kings, had an impressive season for all intents and purposes. And now there is a ton of interest in him overseas. And I'm told that he is completely willing to test the waters as far as what the options are outside of the NBL. And so while the Sydney Kings would like to keep him, there's a good chance that they get priced out of Jonah Bolden.
And again, I understand that. I thought he was terrific. This is the dude who retired and took so much time away from the game. The way he came in and made an impact, he has an off-season now to continue to grow and his game, and it wouldn't surprise me at all. And again, that I know his short-lived stint in the NBA was just that, but he has the NBA tag alongside him now, which is also going to help increase his value. And I think that if that is overseas, then so be it. But again, I'd love to see him stay, and I think he'll make a massive impact in the NBL 25 if that happens.
Doesn't feel like it's with the Kings, though, does it?
As of now, doesn't feel that way. Things can change, of course, but as of right now, my prediction would be that he wouldn't be back.
Yeah, and again, if it does happen, it does eventuate that they go down that path and he did stay at the Kings, I could see there being success. Again, the ability to step out and shoot the three, I think, could really fit into that. But again, I think I'm with you, Olgan, that I think that he ends up in a different jersey.
And I will say, he would like to stay, and they would like to keep him. It just seems like the talks right now are quite far apart.
Does seem that way, doesn't it? The other on the lazy Susan is Aaron Baines. Now, he's on names to watch because, well, we don't know what he's doing yet. And then there is the, I guess, the perception that we can clear up or we can confirm that if Aaron Baines doesn't play, then Brisbane are going to have a war chest of money to play with. So where do things sit with Aaron Baines right now?
So Aaron Baines, it seems like it's an open secret that this is coming to the end of his career. And so that is the sort of expectation that I think Brisbane is working with, that he may not be back as a player. It doesn't seem as though, from whom the people I speak to, that he's going to go anywhere else outside of Brisbane. And so make of that what you will. You sort of leave that to him to make a decision on what his playing future is like. When it comes to the war chest, there's a good chance that a good bulk of that war chest will be paying the second year of guys whose contracts that Brisbane back-ended.
Like a Josh Bannon kind of thing.
Right. Yep. When they signed all these guys, they had Aaron Baines on this big contract. And so they did have to back-end a lot of these contracts. And so the money that frees up from that Aaron Baines deal coming off the table, most of it will go to making sure that those guys are paid in the second years of their respective deals.
It's a very fascinating one to watch because, as you said, if he doesn't want to leave Brisbane, he wants to stay there. Tyrone Harrison was unbelievable, and if he could stay there for NBL 25. And Rocco Zakarcy is going to deserve more minutes, rightly so, before he becomes draft eligible. So then he becomes really the third big down that line. But can he still have an impact in the league next year? I think absolutely. In more ways than just being a mentor to potentially to Rocco and Tyrone Harrison, who's still growing and improving his game. But it is a fascinating one to watch.
But I guess the other part to that too is I think we all believe that Aaron can still have an impact in the league. It's at what price, I suppose. That's going to be the challenging part, isn't it?
The price, and also we know how comfortable he is back home in Brisbane and his family situated there. And I think Brisbane understand that as well. So that is the other thing to watch. And again, I know his impact was down in terms of production, but I still think he can give them a lot and give teams a lot going forward in a smaller capacity, no doubt.
So they're the names to watch. The other factor to watch here are options still to be taken up. Now, when we spoke about the key dates, by then we'll know all of the options, what's happening one way or the other. But there are some options that are very, very interesting and will have a big say in what this entire period looks like. The first one is Joe Lualachul. His option is a player option right now, so that'll be on him to make the decision. What do we think here?
I mean, as of now, all of the intel that I get is that he's yet to make a decision on it. The focus has always been to go and win a championship with Melbourne United, and that has been basically a tunnel vision goal for him. And so we are still unsure of what's going to happen with that, but it'll be interesting for United if potentially they have to replace both Joe Lualachul Jr. and Ariel Hakpori, two really solid defensive bigs, two primary pieces of their team. That'll be interesting if they do have to replace both of them. That'd be really difficult for United to do this offseason if that's what they have to do.
The NBA side of it is one thing for him that he never really got to touch and have the opportunity to go over there. And we know he's getting older, but we've seen it all season long. I mean, he's one of the best big men in the league going around. I still think I want to see him have that opportunity, but also in terms of offers and where he can make money in that Asian leagues, and whether it's China, whether it's Japan, the money that could come for him. Once again, he's already done that once, but it's going to continue to come because you look at the way they try to structure a lot of their teams. It's American point guards, and you don't take too many Australian point guards going over there, and it's American or international big men. Xavier Cook has gone over there, teaming up with John Mooney. We know Chris Smith is in Japan, who's bowling out now the Brisbane Bullets import. So that's always hard to compete with if money becomes an issue.
And we've seen Achul Jr. do that before. Obviously, he was in China last season instead of the NBL. And it's not just China, it's not just Japan, it's not just Europe and Israel. It's also Africa. Mm. The African League is getting a ton of money. And so they're going to start throwing offers at these sorts of guys as well. And so we'll see what happens if that becomes another impediment of the NBL keeping really high-level local talent.
Tyrell Harrison and the Brisbane Bullets. This is a club decision. We were just talking about Aaron Baines. And Pete, you were such a fan of Harrison. Are we assuming that the Bullets would want to take this option up?
Oh, I think so. I mean, the way they're trying to go around, you saw about what team they can put together on paper. Nathan Sobey, we're going to continue to roll down the Sobey being our number one guy and put some other pieces around. I thought Harrison fit in perfectly, and it took him a while. If you go back and watch the start of the season, it wasn't until the third game of Aaron Baines' suspension did Harrison kind of grab it with both hands and say, this is now my spot. I need to take this and run with it. And he did that, a most improved player candidate at the time. And I think he continued to grow. It's just untapped potential alongside the Twin Towers of Rocco Zakarcy. That local big man, again, a lot of it depends on the pieces they put around, but I thought he was fascinating.
Yeah, from what I understand, The Bullets have a bunch of options that they have to exercise in some way or another. Team options on Harrison, on Isaac White, a mutual option on Casey Prather. The expectation is that they will pick up all of those. And the expectation is that I have is that Casey Prather will also pick up his side of the mutual option. And so he's someone who I would expect back. I expect them to pick up all of their team options.
DJ Hoge is a club option with the Sydney Kings. They've just signed Xavier Cooks. So does that mean that DJ Hoge will be looking for a new home next season?
If you're putting two and two together, that is a reasonable...
Two plus two equals four. Done.
So you can. That's a reasonable assumption to make. And it's unfortunate because we really didn't get to see the best of DJ Hoge in Sydney. We saw what he was in the Cairns Taipans. He just had injury after injury with the Sydney Kings. And so unfortunately, we didn't get to see the best of it. But if you're the Sydney Kings and you have the opportunity to get Xavier Cooks, you absolutely jump at that. They have done that. And so it more than likely means that DJ Hoge is not attainable anymore.
It does become a hot piece for some other teams potentially. And again, we didn't see him at his best, much like Will McDowell-White in this season, but you just know what he's capable of, right? So you can pick up the phone if that option's not taken up and just test the waters and see what kind of piece can we put alongside. This is an all-NBL caliber player before having to deal with that shoulder injury.
Do you know a team that I'm told is ready to show some interest in DJ Hoge?
Well, you're going to tell us.
The Cairns Taipans.
Really?
Oh, there you go.
So DJ Hoge, who broke out with the Cairns Taipans in NBL. That is where he plied his trade to the best of his abilities. He is someone who they are interested in bringing back.
That's a very, very interesting one. As is Will Hickey, who has a club option with the Illawarra Hawks. Arguably one of the stories of the playoff series is his emergence. Do we see any roadblocks here? Do we see Will Hickey back with the Hawks next season?
I mean, I think it would be absolute malpractice if they don't, just pick up the team option immediately, right? It just makes a ton of sense. His growth, what you see in him as far as the potential, he's got size, he's got athleticism. You can see the smarts, the IQ developing over each game. So it would make a ton of sense for them to just pick that team option up.
It also makes a little bit of sense to potentially not only pick it up, I think that should be a given in something that's inevitable, is thinking about, okay, well, let's pick it up and let's add another year on the end. Let's add another 2 years on that, maybe put an option on the third. But let's extend you now. Under Justin Tatum, the way that you've shown that you want to play and buy in, I think you is deserving of more than just picking up the option. It is rewarding him with an extra couple of years of security.
And the kid deserves to be paid, I think, after what he did in the playoff series.
Which is only going to come from an extra thing, because you pick up the option, they're not going to throw you an extra couple on just that year. I think that would come with, okay, well, another year or two, let's bump that money up.
Yeah. I want to see a full season of this from Dave O'Hickey. I want to see what he can do for a team as a regular part of a rotation. If he can do that, then absolutely pay the kid.
Lastly is Corey and Ty Webster. Now, we bunched them together because they're brothers, obviously, but also because there are club decisions to be made from the Wildcats on both of them. Do we see a situation where they're both back next year, one is back or none are back?
As of now, my feel is that the team will pick up Ty Webster's team option and more than likely not pick up Corey Webster's team option. They don't have much flexibility this offseason anyway. With the re-signing of Christian Doolittle, Corey Webster coming off the books would potentially be the only sort of slot that they could fill. And then if Jesse Wagstaff wants to return, which everything that we hear indicates that he does want to, then he would theoretically just go into that spot. Mm. And so then there are no local spots for this team left to fill. It's just one more import spot left, unless they do what they did last season, which is get off a few contracts before free agency begins.
And I'm wondering if that is going to line up with a Will McDowell-White decision. We know they were in that conversation last year. They picked up the phone, and even when Bryce Cotton's texting you and wanting to be alongside, because again, that becomes enticing. And does that hold off on the options? And do you have to try and weigh that up before it all begins? It's going to be fascinating to watch.
That's a good point too, about that they have shown previously that they're willing to move on from existing contracts, i.e. Todd Blanchfield and Mitch Norton. So from Wildcats point of view, fans will be watching that wondering, what are they doing? I guess they have shown in the past they're willing to do that.
And I think we've seen around the entire league that teams aren't against doing that.
Yeah.
We just saw it with Sam Menenga, with Cairns Taipans. We saw it with Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, with Alan Williams. And there's going to be more. So we've seen this before. I think if a player is contracted, that doesn't necessarily mean we're going to see that player in that uniform the next season.
We also wanted to flag some of the college names to watch. Now, part of the reason is because we get asked a lot, and part of the reason is because, i.e. a Kyle Bowen, a Flynn Cameron, a Menenga and Wardenburg from a couple of seasons gone by, there are more college kids returning to the NBL. Here are some of the names, as you can see, that are worth keeping an eye on. Alex Dukas is obviously the biggest of the lot. What are the roadblocks here, though, in terms of more college kids coming back to Australia?
So when we look at these names, these are the seniors who have graduated and are no longer eligible to continue playing in college. The issue is the NBL has often gotten guys out of college before they graduate or before they reach their senior year. We saw someone like Josh Bannon come recently. The only issue is that NIL money is becoming so, so big. And so you can have someone, you can have a junior out of college who is maybe not even a roster level player. Maybe he's a DP level player. You can go and offer him $100,000 and he's making $150,000 USD in NIL money in an obscure college in the US. There is just so much money out there in college basketball that it's really difficult for the league to poach guys. It's an issue when it comes to local talent, and it's an issue when it comes to potential next stars talent too. The money out there, the NIL money, is just so large, and it's really tough for teams to deal with.
You played college at the wrong time.
It hurts, mate. It really does. I could have. There was some elite bagel places.
That's why you're here with us.
I mean, some elite bagel places getting around the big fella. But yeah, that's. I mean, Alex Dukas is one. We spoke about him in the marketplace a bit earlier on in the season when we recorded that he's shown in St. Mary's that not only is he ready to make a jump to professional, but being a local kid and coming in the size, and he's played the preseason games when St. Mary's have come down. They've played Melbourne United. They've played around. He can kind of come in and make an impact, like the guys you mentioned, Kyle Bowen, Sam Menenga, the body being ready, but Lepepe as well. There's a couple of them out there that I'm going to be fascinated to see what happens. And you know what? The key word for today is fascinated, because I've been fascinated by a lot.
You have used that word a lot, actually. Yeah. Before we finish up, one name that I wanted to flag was Deng Adel. It feels like every year when we get together to discuss free agency in the offseason, Deng Adel's name gets thrown around. Where does he sit right now?
From what I understand, Deng Adel has an interest in returning to the NBL. He's always had this interest. The interest hasn't always been mutual from NBL teams. But someone I spoke to recently, I got word that he's in advanced talks with the Brisbane Bullets. And so that is a deal that I expect to get done sooner than later. He is someone who will end up there. The Bullets have had interest in filling their DJ Mitchell spot.
Yep.
The spot that he, their backup four spot. They had some interest in Kyron Galloway. I'm told that there's a good chance that Kyron Galloway probably ends up in Cairns. So I'll throw that one out there
That.
And if we're out here just like throwing intel out there,
it's all here for.
We'll keep going. We spoke about Mitch McCarron the last time we guys met up here. We met up here for the marketplace. You mentioned the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. I'm told that there's no interest from the Phoenix in Mitch McCarron. And so that there was interest, that seems to be off the table now. And so he will end up elsewhere. So from what I understand, the Wildcats, the Breakers, and the Hawks are three teams that are preparing to show interest in Mitch McCarron. And so we'll see him somewhere else in NBL 25.
I can echo that. No, I thought we were going to get to that. I heard the same, that their interest was there and then that was pulled. But I also did hear that out west was the phone call had been picked up as well, which could be interested to see what happens with Mitch McCarron. Again, offers so much more than we saw the last 3 years. You put him on the right team. I think he's more understanding now that if he does have to be a backup, so be it, to find his feet once again. Let's hope that he's in the right situation.
The Perth Wildcats will be an interesting watch, because as of now, it doesn't look like there's much flexibility. It doesn't look like there's a spot to fill. But they have interest in someone like Mitch McCarron. They have interest in someone like Tom Wilson. So we'll see what happens with regard to potential moving and shaking with that franchise over there. They have an import spot to fill, but they do want to add a local. And so we'll see what they do in order to make that happen.
Any final thoughts? Anyone else that we haven't covered off? We've covered a lot of territory.
We got through everybody.
We did.
This is only episode one, too. There's a lot more to come.
Yeah, look, I'm excited to keep doing this. I'm excited for us to continue talking about the intel that we get and who could fit where. And then also, I'm excited to put our mock teams together. I'm excited to continue to explain how this process works, because it can get complicated. There are marquee rules. There are five-player rules. But I think once we paint the picture, I think it's really easy to grasp, and I think it makes this entire process way more enjoyable.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that there's so many other rules about the salary cap, and it's so easy to sit there and be like, the reported largest deal in history, they're going to be miles over the cap. Well, no, they do it the right way. Yeah. Every team understands. Everyone has the same opportunity to use the rules to the benefit of their team, and then try and do the best to win a championship.
Coming up in future episodes of The Marketplace, we will do exactly that. We'll explore the salary cap. We'll explore all of the rules and options available for teams. Also, imports. We chose today not to speculate on every single import and whether they're returning, because we know that that's a dance that gets done. But next time around, we will focus a little sharper on the imports of the NBL and whether they will be back next season. Olgun, well done.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody.
Pete, we've got a lot of work to do when it comes to depth charts and filling holes.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks for being with us on The Marketplace. We will catch you next time. This is going to be a lot of fun.